Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Another episode of Lost in the Static. I am Josh Hadley. Who the fuck else would you expect me to be? Scott is off again this week because we can't get together to record. But in the meantime, go to adamandeve.com. Charlie, do you know the rest of this?
Enter the promo code Drome.
Static.
Static? Yes. Yep. Of course it is. Why the hell wouldn't it be? Enter the promo code Static and get 25% off.
50% off.
50% off whatever vibrating or slippery things you want to get, in addition to a mystery gift, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And is there a free DVD?
Three free DVDs.
All of that rhymes.
And free shipping in the United States.
Just like this mail order bride site. Free shipping if they're over 30.
Pounds or years?
Years. Most of them are over 30 pounds. I mean, you're catering to a very, very small niche market if they're under 30 pounds.
And see, there's a pun in there, too, because you said small, so. What we're actually going to be talking about tonight, because you guys might notice whenever I have Charlie the Fister McMullen on, we talk comedy. We're going to talk comedy again tonight. Last time was stand-up and whatnot. I want to talk comedy in general, where it comes to movies, daily life, magazines, comics, etc. You being a stand-up comic, obviously comedy is part of you, and frankly, I think you're a pretty goddamn funny guy, whether it's the stand-up or Live Nude Geeks or whatever. I think you're a pretty funny guy and a witty guy. Are there people that don't?
Yeah, there's plenty of people that don't. I mean, whenever you get like a bunch of comedians together in a group, you're always going to have some people that don't like other people. And usually people that do like really broad kind of just sort of you know, trying to be everything to everyone. They don't like me. They don't think I'm funny. They think my jokes are, one time I got like way too wordy, and which I thought was, you know, not a fair thing to say to somebody who talks for a living.
You know, you and that goddamn hubris of yours.
And hummus as well. I make a mean hummus.
Right. And I've never had your hummus, but I've had your hubris. So I can say I'm going to take a guess. Your hummus is worth it.
But not as salty as the hubris.
It goes without saying. Now, when it comes to humor, obviously it's a very subjective thing. I mean, I don't think anyone will debate that. That what I find funny might not be what you find funny. What I will debate...
birth of a nation.
What I will debate you on, though, Charlie, is there are things that are so unfunny, I can't believe anybody ever thought they were funny. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. There are things that I feel that way about as well.
Because, like, I see movies that I just can't imagine anyone, I mean a stoner or anybody, finding funny, yet somehow somebody made a movie out of it.
Right, shit that Dr. Hibbert would not laugh at.
Right, like, now, obviously the movie hasn't, at the time we're recording this, the movie doesn't come out for another couple of days, but, like, everything I have seen, from the behind the scenes to the trailers and everything, for instance, movie 43.
Right.
Not only is that shockingly not funny, it seems to be, because in an interview with the directors, they said that they've set out to make the most offensive movie of all time. Maybe they succeeded, maybe they didn't. Problem is, they didn't seem to write jokes. They just seemed to write offensive and forgot that it was supposed to be funny, too.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a flawed statement in and of itself. Nobody can set out to make an offensive movie.
They actually said that they sat out to it, and I don't know, some of the things in here look like they're trying so hard to be offensive, but like the Chloe Moretz getting her period and they try and stuff her with frozen peas to stop the bleeding. That just seems to be offensive, but it's not funny. I can't imagine the type of person that would find that funny.
Well, okay, I would like to state that I am reserving judgment until I've seen it, because
just talking about what I've seen in the trailers and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, even stuff they have in the trailers, you can't really tell if it's funny or not until you see it in context, everything that comes immediately before and immediately after it. Sometimes it can be funny. I mean, the movies like that, there's no one cohesive story, although this one I think is trying to have like some sort of red thread going through all the vignettes. But I mean, movies like this, it's really hard to edit a trailer for. And one thing I brought up to you when we were talking on the phone the other day was The Ten, which you said you have not seen.
Right.
For those of you who haven't seen it, The Ten, I think, is a brilliant movie. Done by a couple guys that were in The State who went on to create Reno 911. It was Thomas Lennon, but I don't know who the other guy was. David Wayne was probably in there somewhere. But The Ten was a series of comic vignettes illustrating each of the Ten Commandments. And one thing I thought was a stroke of genius was they cast Winona Ryder in the one for Thou Shalt Not Steal.
And see, I can see some inherent, almost punny humor there, but I don't see that as slap your thigh. Oh my God! But there is humor in that.
Right.
With like the movie 43 thing, I don't see Johnny Knoxville going, use your superior height when they're fighting a leprechaun. That's just, it's not funny.
I think that's kind of funny. Because of how stupid it is, because that's something that an idiot would say. See, in order to determine whether something's funny, you have to know something about the character saying the line. I mean, lines just aren't funny just by themselves, unless you're watching a stand-up or something like that. I mean, something like Movie 43, I think you should really wait until you've seen it before you judge whether or not it's funny. Because I agree with you. When it comes to the trailer, it looks like they just set out to be offensive first and funny second, if the funny ever happens. And also, I don't like when people set out to make the most offensive movie of all time, because it doesn't work that way. Same thing with a cult movie. You can't set out to make a cult movie. It just becomes one.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that just needs to happen. Because when you set out to make one, you're kind of defeating the purpose of a cult movie.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, Rocky Horror Picture Show has become a huge cult movie. It didn't start out that way. It was just a musical that Richard O'Brien wanted to make a musical about.
Well, and it was supposed to be a mainstream movie.
Right. You know, same thing with Toxic Avenger. That became a huge cult hit. That was not Lloyd's intention. It just kind of happened.
Right. But then you brought up Lloyd Kaufman. Now, Troma is known for a very certain style of humor, even in their serious movies. I don't know, arguably Toxic Avenger is serious because it plays itself serious, but it's still clearly a comedy.
Right.
But in things like that, there's a very specific type of humor that when I see it in other movies, I go, that's Troma humor. Is that good or bad? When a company or a comedian or something of that nature kind of has their own style of humor, and whether intentional or not, when someone else goes into that area, is it tainted by us immediately going to think of Troma, or is that kind of a compliment to Troma without maybe the other film even meaning to?
I think it's a massive compliment to Troma, and it's always been sort of a point of envy with me, because like I've talked to Lloyd a few times, and I really do envy the man. I mean, he has his own voice, and it's maybe the most well-defined voice in cinema today. I mean, you can spot a Troma movie. He has his own stamp of individuality. And I think it's obvious when people try to imitate that. Hobo with a shotgun, exactly. You can't make a Troma movie without being Troma. It doesn't work that way. That's like, you know, trying to make a Picasso and you're not Pablo Picasso. People can tell if you're trying to imitate something. Now, you can be influenced, certainly. Like, if you watch There's Something About Mary, I mean, that's not bloody at all. It's not a horror movie, even. But you can tell that the humor was influenced by Troma.
I didn't like Something About Mary, but I can kind of see what you're getting at.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with South Park, or maybe a little bit closer to Slither.
Which I hated.
I know you did.
But James Gunn does come from the Troma school.
Right.
So, I mean, Romeo and Juliet, and he used to do the Troma TV series and things of that nature. So, yeah, James Gunn definitely comes from Lloyd's school.
Yeah, and if anyone's earned the right to be influenced by Troma, it's definitely him.
Right. I mean, I don't like James Gunn's movies or his writing, but at the same time, I really respect the man. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Because, like, I got into a public fight with him on Facebook a while ago, right before Lollipop Chainsaw came out, and obviously I hadn't played the game because it hadn't come out yet, but the trailers looked horrible. And now that I've played the game, I think the game is horrible, and it's horribly written. But I still respect the man, yet at the same time, I don't like the fact that he seems to think humor in this is just coming up with a quote-unquote creative way to say fuck. That seems to be where all the humor in Lollipop Chainsaw is having zombies go, you fuckity 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 fucking fucking fuck fuck cunt. That seems to be where the humor in the game comes from. I really don't want to meet somebody who thinks that that is what humor is.
Right. Well, I mean, he also thinks that, that's one joke of many. I mean, I agree with you. That's not funny in and of itself. And movie 43 is showing a lot of signs of that. But I don't know. I didn't even know what Lollipop Chainsaw was until you told me about it.
But then, okay, how about this for humor? How about something like Tim and Eric? Anti-humor, as we'll call it. For those that don't know, the whole Tim and Eric shtick is they intentionally set out to make the unfunniest comedy of all time. Therefore, how unfunny it is makes it funny. That just makes my anus pucker when I think about stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Tim and Eric.
But they're not the only ones, Charlie. There are numerous other TV shows and movies that kind of take that style of, you are so unfunny, you're fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Sports Night is a very good example.
Is that a good place to go, or is that a dangerous place to play?
I think it's a pretentious as fuck place to play. I mean, I would never do that. I would never try to make something so unfunny that maybe it becomes funny. I mean, it's pretentious, and I mean, when you have to tell people like that, say, oh no, I know it's not funny, but don't worry. You know what I mean? Like, that's bullshit. I don't buy into that at all. Like, Tim and Eric, awesome show, great job. I've never laughed at an episode. It's just not good.
Well, it's kind of, do you remember the Simpsons episode with Cheech and Chong?
Yes.
And remember, Chong wanted to do something so different that he got Skinner as his new partner, who was so unfunny. He's like, it's a whole new way to do comedy. I think that was a shot at Tim and Eric. I'm not sure. But I agree with you. That kind of thinking is pretentious, man. It's not funny comedy. It's unfunny comedy, but that's still comedy. Get it?
Right.
I hate that, because a pretentious is the perfect word for that kind of bullshit.
Yeah, I don't like that kind of behavior at all. I mean, it's the same thing where I don't know. It's just like a pretentious gothic. I don't know why I'm reminded of Tim Burton, but Tim Burton way of thinking.
I can kind of see where you get that, though. I can kind of see that.
Yeah, like Tim Burton at this point in his career does not even know he's remaking stuff. He thinks that just because he's doing it, that's enough of a distinction.
I think he's turned into kind of the cinema equivalent of Ozzy Osbourne. He doesn't even know where he is. They just kind of point him in a direction and he goes and does his thing.
Right.
Because that's what Ozzy Osbourne's become.
I think that's somewhat insulting to Ozzy Osbourne, but I know what you're getting at.
No, actually, I get that from Henry Rollins. When I saw Henry Rollins do his stand-up, he was talking about going to Ozzy's Christmas party, and he said that's the impression he got from Ozzy. People just kind of pointed him in a general direction, and he wandered around looking like something out of the Dark Crystal. That's the way he put it. You know, he wandered around like one of the old, not the Skeksis, the other kind. It's been years since I've seen it. But he's like, he wandered around like one of the creatures out of the Dark Crystal, and he had no clue that there were people at his house or anything.
Smells like Gelfling!
Yeah, it's like, so I think Tim Burton has kind of become the equivalent of Ozzy Osbourne. He's just kind of there.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I mean, the reason why I would compare Tim Burton to Tim and Eric is they just think because it's them doing it, that's good enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of a cop-out is what it really is. It's a way to get out of trying. They think their concept is strong enough, they're done, that they don't have to do anything else. And that's just lazy. It's weak. Do not enter that sauce in the county fair because it's weak sauce.
What about something like The Onion? Something I generally find very, very funny. I really do think The Onion is a very witty, I don't know, can we even call him a newspaper anymore?
Yeah. I mean, I get actual news from The Onion.
Well, the reason I'm kind of saying that they're in kind of a gray area is they are taking true things and spinning them just enough that they're funny but still believable that they might be real. That is the creepiest part of the humor of The Onion, that you actually have to look at yourself and go, I'm not sure if they're joking or not.
Yeah, and getting that close to that line is what separates talented from the untalented. Right. And I think the Onion is a good example of what I've always had as my own personal philosophy of comedy. I have always thought that the key to comedy is sincerity, taking something absurd and playing it as straight as you can. I think, it's the same reason why Mel Brooks got the actual guy who sang all the Western themes to sing the theme to Blazing Saddles. Taking something absurd and playing it straight is the key to comedy. And the Onion's attention to detail in that principle is amazing. I mean, that's why I love The Onion so much.
Because there was one, it wasn't an Onion, The Onion, it was some other satirical site. I actually had to Google to find out. It was something about Fox News saying something that I actually said, you know what, I can totally see Fox News saying this, so I don't know if it's satire or not. Because I could really see someone on Fox News actually doing this. So I had to Google to find out, they were joking. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, over here you have The Onion trying to be funny, and over here you have Fox News trying not to be funny, and they are headed towards each other.
They're kind of meeting, meeting in the middle, aren't they?
Yeah, and they are soon going to pass each other going in different directions.
What about humor? Now, this one is absolutely subjective, but I have never found this kind of humor funny. It just goes on and on and on, and that makes it funny humor. Such as, I mean, Family Guy does this, The Simpsons have fallen into this. You see this on lots of sketch comedy shows where they'll have, or Saturday Night Live is a perfect example. They'll have a great sketch going. At the 2-minute mark, the jokes have all been told. Problem is, the sketch is 4.5 minutes long, and they just keep going and going. And it's like, okay, you've surpassed being funny. Now you're fucking annoying.
Yeah. That definitely happens way more than it should. I think that's a very fine line that you got to pay close attention to stay on the right side of it being funny, because that can work. I mean, take let's see. I know this probably won't fly with you, but it's the first example I can think of. The scene in Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back, where they fly all over the country beating up people that were talking shit about them on the internet. There's one part in that scene where they're in an office and there's a guy on the phone.
I thought that scene was funny, where the guy keeps asking him to wait and they just
start
beating him with the phone.
Yes, exactly. That had to be the perfect time, or else it wouldn't have been funny. Like, it can't be too short. It definitely can't be too long. You know what I mean?
But if they'd done that, hang on a second, two more times, you would have gone, all right, this is really you're right on that line right now, guys.
Right.
Because comedy is all about timing. But then what about just repeating something endlessly? I'm thinking Saturday Night Live with the whole making copies, which was never funny in the first place. But those sketches go on for 5 goddamn minutes of the exact same joke.
Well, how long has it been since you watched Saturday Night Live with any regularity?
Like new episodes?
Yeah.
Since I got fired from an NBC station, so 3 years or so. Because it used to always be on after we got done with the 10 o'clock news, so I'd always catch parts of it then.
Okay. Well, I mean, they've actually gotten a lot better than that. I mean, I know there was a time when every episode was just full of that shit. I remember, I don't remember what year it was, but Jerry Seinfeld hosted, and there was a sketch where he was playing Moses, who came over to someone's house for dinner. I don't remember exactly what it was. But yeah, it was bad. It wasn't funny, and somebody said, well, let's just make it longer and see if it gets funny, and it didn't.
Well, and then, this next example I don't think was supposed to be funny, but knowing Rob Zombie's style, I suspect it may have been intended. That scene in Halloween 2 after the ambulance hits the cow, and it's just 4 uncut straight minutes of guy going, fuck, 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 for 4 minutes straight. And you just kind of go, really? Nobody thought to cut this down? No one?
Well, I think on the Rob Zombie's part, that's probably an aesthetic choice. I mean, because there was a very similar moment in, you probably remember, in House of a Thousand Corpses. That just weird, really stark silence right before that cop got shot in the back of the head.
And
remember?
I thought that actually worked with the Walt Whitman song playing and whatnot. That seemed to be artistic. A guy screaming fuck 100 times in 4 minutes, that's not really artistic, I don't think. At least
not,
in my opinion.
Well, not in and of itself, but it's all about trying to instill a certain feeling in the audience.
Perhaps.
I mean, in that example, I don't know if it was apropos to the scene that it was being used in. He might have just been doing it just for the fuck of it, but that is why I think he did it.
All right, then moving on to the next part. How about, and I do not like this term, I don't like this kind of comedy, and we'll leave intentional out for the moment, but the, oh, I love this movie, it's hilarious because it's so awful, it's so bad, it's good.
Well, see, that's like setting out to make the most offensive movie there is. I mean, very rarely, I won't say never, because, I mean, the Lost Skeleton of Kadabra pulled this off. But you can't intentionally try to make a movie that's so bad it's good. It either happens or it doesn't.
Plan 9 from Outer Space being a perfect example. Amazing movie. It shouldn't be, but it is.
Right. It was hilarious, but Ed Wood was not making a comedy.
Exactly. And that's my point. But Lost Skeleton, they were trying to make a comedy, so I'm not sure if that would qualify.
Well, I think that's the only example that I personally have seen of somebody trying to make a movie that's so bad it's funny.
No, I would go with if you've ever listened to the commentary on Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, that was their point.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, I don't think they were trying to make that so bad it was good. I think they were just trying to make that funny just from the get-go. I mean, again, I can't say for certain because everybody's motivations are different, and only the director of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes knows for sure. But that's how it seemed to me. I think that was a comedy.
Yeah.
Same thing. I mean, in the same way that Shaun of the Dead is a comedy first.
And Shaun of the Dead was a hilarious movie.
Mm.
On the other hand, you've got the same era of, I don't know, would you call Shaun of the Dead a parody movie? I mean, it kind of is and it kind of isn't. That one to me is kind of right on that line.
I would call it somewhat of a parody because it does
satire.
It's more of a satire. It skewers the cliches of zombie movies, but it's definitely not a spoof. And that's why I waited for Shaun of the Dead to come out on video, because not only did it not come to the theater in the tiny town that I live in, but I was afraid it was going to be a spoof. And I really don't like spoofs. Not since Airplane have I really liked spoofs. I mean, I think Scary Movie is what killed it for me.
Scary Movie was bad, and I've seen it uncut. I've seen the work print with a ton of cut, in quote, jokes that are almost movie 43 level of, you were just trying to be offensive and not funny with these, weren't you?
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Scary Movie, to me, when I watched it, it was trying to shock.
Right.
And they rested too heavily on that, where they didn't even write any jokes. That scene with Sean Wayans in the bathroom at the movie theater is a good example. Rather than write a joke, we'll just show a dick. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's just But then you've also got, and Scary Movie is a perfect example of this as well. This is something that John Kay of Ren and Stimpy ran into. Will just be gross. Gross is funny, right?
Right.
And I don't think gross for the sake of gross is funny. Ren and Stimpy, when he was doing that, he seemed to.
Right. Well, I mean, cocaine's a hell of a drug, John.
I know, but Scary Movie did the same thing. It's like one of the cut jokes was she was on top of him and they were having sex and he came so hard it shot her up into the ceiling and filled the entire room with semen.
Right.
And I'm just going, that's just gross. It's not funny.
Yeah. That going, I mean, pushing a joke farther than it needs to go doesn't make it funnier. But, I mean, the movies like that wouldn't keep getting made. And, again, I said I was going to stave off judgment until I've seen it, but movie 43 is probably a good example of this. If they didn't have their audiences, these movies wouldn't keep getting made. Because when I see a preview for, like, a haunted house, or I saw a trailer for Scary Movie 5 when I went and saw Django, and, I mean, I know that there are legions of assholes in their 20s that are going to flock to these pieces of shit, quote them for about a month before their, you know, before their attention span kicks in and prevents
Charlie,
them from...
when I saw Django, I saw the same trailer you did.
Mm-hmm.
I was dead stone-faced. Everyone around me, I was in a packed theater because I saw Django opening night,
yep,
was fucking laughing their asses off.
Yes.
I just kind of went, oh my God. What have I got myself into?
Yeah, the world is full of people who love shit like that because they don't want subtlety in their jokes. They want to be told flat out, what's funny, laugh now. You know what I mean?
It's almost like a sitcom without the laugh track that, you know, here is the break for you to laugh. We'll start the next joke in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of got that like with Married with Children episodes. After, by about the fourth or fifth season, you know, once... You saw these long pauses after jokes for all the applause and laughter to die down. I think that kind of self-awareness hurts the comedy.
Right. That, I mean, Married with Children is a good example of a good show that went on too long.
Way too long. Well, okay, then how about this with Married with Children? How about when the style of humor changes? You look at the early Married with Children's. Al has sex with Peggy all the time, willingly. He was a regular guy. It didn't become this cartoon that it became in the fifth or sixth season.
Because it really was a cartoon.
It was a live-action cartoon. So what do you think caused that to change? Was it just simply the writing staff changed and the creators of the show moved on to Unhappily Ever After? Or do you think it was the audience changed? Because you got to remember, by this point, The Simpsons was on and was making a similar transition from arguably realistic to a literal cartoon. Do you think in Married with Children's case, it was the writing just progressed or just new writers came in with a different definition of what Al Bundy should be like?
I think it's a combination of the two. I mean, from the audience perspective, society is like that. Society changes. What was funny in the 50s was no longer funny in the 60s. Then what became funny in the 60s was no longer funny in the 70s. And, you know, the audience, society changes like that all the time. And it's going to happen for the, you know, until the end of time. And when a show lasts as long as Married with Children did.
Is that 10 or 11 seasons, something like that?
I think it was 11 seasons. I mean, that's a long fucking time for a sitcom. You have to change if you're going to keep going.
What about then when changes don't work? I'm one of those few people that like a fourth wall breaking joke when it's done right. For instance, did you ever watch Unhappily Ever After?
Mm-hmm.
I loved that show. And remember how Stephanie Hodge's character was, how can we charmingly put this, kind of a cascading thunder cunt?
Sure. I think that's fair.
Well, and then after a while, they turned her character into a lesbian because they wrote her into a corner, and then they killed her off camera when she was going to leave the show.
Right.
And fans hated that. So literally just one episode, she walks back on set and says, fans didn't like me being dead, so my character's alive again, and then it's never brought up again. That, to me, was funny. You know, we're not even going to write it into the show how she's not dead anymore.
It was funny. I think that I've seen the episode that you're talking about, and I think that could have been done a little more cleverly, a little more subtly, I guess. But, yeah, it was funny. I mean, when you do it right, it was funny. Like, if it were me that was writing the show, I wouldn't have said, well, the audience didn't like my character being dead. I would have, just come up with something that compares it to without just flat out saying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that when you break the fourth wall, it can be funny. Whereas, like, when The Simpsons breaks the fourth wall, now it seems to be laborious. When they're taking shots at Simpsons fans, you realize you're kind of preaching to the converted, right? The people who don't get this joke aren't your target, and the people who do get the joke are also not your target because they don't find it funny.
Right.
Who are you making this joke for? The writers. That's who they're making the joke for, themselves.
Yeah. Well, writers do that, and I'm not going to begrudge a writing staff, because The Simpsons is full of people who have been writing that show for the past 15 years. I mean, The Simpsons has been on the air for almost 20 years. I'm guessing if they have one of the original writers still working there, that dude has got to be doing stuff like that just to keep himself going into work every day. You know what I mean?
No, I agree with that. But then, you know, like you've also got, like, it's not so much humor, but have you ever seen the porn Night Dreams or Cafe Flesh?
I don't believe I have.
They were made by a guy named Steven Sayhadian. His screen name was Rinse Dream. He wanted to take porn to a higher level. These are like 1980 and 81. He thought porn could be art. So he made porno films that were so gorgeous to look at, but with the fuck scenes were so intentionally unerotic that he was almost daring you to get turned on watching the fucks in a fuck flick. That, to me, is kind of humorous. Don't you think? Making a porn that actually makes fun of people that watch porn?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that's funny. I mean, that kind of reminds me of Beavis and Butthead. Beavis and Butthead, I mean, that show was making fun of its own audience to its face.
Oh, yeah. Well, and see, with Beavis and Butthead, my thing was, I knew Beavis and Butthead. I went to school with real Beavis and Buttheads. I mean, those were not parodies. Those were mirrors of people I went to school with.
Right.
So,
but
my humor came from. Some of the humor I got out of that was, I know that dude. I'm going to see him tomorrow at school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I appreciate it on that level because I, you know, from small town Colorado, of course I knew dudes like that. I still do. But I liked it on the other level as well because, I mean, Beavis and Butthead were two morons that sat around watching MTV. That show itself was on MTV.
Or how about when something like that, which Beavis and Butthead arguably is not a highbrow show. I don't think you'll fight me on that. But then every now and then when they would sneak in a highbrow joke, I kind of wondered, who was that joke aimed at? Clearly not the audience of Beavis and Butthead, right?
Right.
You know, like,
I remember an episode, they were watching a video and there was this high-pitched beeping as part of the song, like whatever music video it was they were watching. And this is an example of a subtle break of the fourth wall joke that I really like. Butthead said, is that the smoke detector? And Beavis said, yeah, I think it is. And Butthead said, man, you should just take the damn batteries out of that thing. And then Beavis said, well, wait, what if there's a, what if there's, well, never mind. Because it was after MTV decreed that they could no longer say the word fire because that kid had set a fire.
Right. I actually remember that.
Yeah.
The one I'm thinking of that was actually kind of intelligent was the one where they accidentally crossed over into Mexico, you know, for like drug smuggling or something. And they're trying to convince the border guards that they're Americans. And he goes, who's the president? And they're like, And then he asked them three or four questions. And he goes, mm-hmm. they're definitely Americans. Mexicans know all this stuff.
Exactly.
And I'm like, okay, that was funny. But I don't think the people who were really enjoying Beavis and Butthead for the whole fire, this kicks ass kind of thing would even get that joke.
Well, see, that's the opposite of what you were talking about The Simpsons. I mean, people who do get the joke don't like it. People who don't get the joke don't like it. That instance of Beavis and Butthead is the exact opposite. I mean, it's funny physically because Beavis and Butthead are in Mexico and they're being stupid. But it's funny to the rest of us too because of that social commentary kind of joke.
Right. And
that to me is good comedy.
But then what about just comedy, and I'm putting the word in quotes here, that is weird for the sake of weird and that equals comedy? Like, oh, look. It's a man playing a guitar while kicking a rhinoceros in the nuts while a mushroom cloud is going off behind him. Comedy! No, that's just weird for the sake of weird to me. That's not funny.
Well, see, I agree with you there, but I can't dismiss it because sometimes that works. Have you ever seen the show Portlandia on IFC?
Unfortunately, I've seen the promos, and those are bad enough to make me go a million miles away from wherever that show is on TV.
Okay. I really like that show. I think it's funny because it does take a different approach. Because my wife and I watch that show all the time. We really like it. And because I was off work yesterday and we were catching up on episodes on demand, and Jeff Goldblum was on one of them. And my wife asked me if I thought Jeff Goldblum was funny, and I said, yeah, I think it's hilarious. And she's like, well, how is that, though? Because he's not really a comedian, and he's not a comedic actor. And I thought about it for a long time, and I remember something my dad told me a really long time ago. A comedian will say funny things, but a truly funny person says things funny.
That makes sense.
And sometimes comedy can happen just organically out of a weird situation. There's no joke, there's no punchline, but some things are just funny. And I think Portlandia is full of moments like that.
Well, and see, one of the types of humor I think is very funny is the kind of you're the last sane man on earth. You know, you've got the one straight man and everyone else is totally nuts. You know, sort of like you wonder if he's the only one who's actually sane. So, such as like Kiff Croker on Futurama.
Right.
He's the only competent person, arguably, in that entire show. And his reactions to everything going on around him are priceless.
Mm-hmm.
I like that kind of humor, that the world's nuts, and I'm the only sane person left. I like that kind of thing.
I do, too. That's breeding ground for good comedy.
But then you've also got this weird thing, and you kind of hit on it a little bit with actors that are not comedians, or at least traditional comedians. What about, in the 80s was the heyday of this, the comedy action film. And I don't mean one that's intentionally like funny, but something like Commando, where it's full of the one-liners and jokes that are supposed to be jokes that really kind of clash with the movie that they're in.
Right. 48 Hours is another good example of that.
I think 48 Hours was destined to be funny anyway. When you've got Eddie Murphy ad-libbing half of his entire dialogue in that movie, there was no way you were going to avoid that being comedy.
Right. Back then, I don't think he can pull a similar coup today.
No, but I mean, 48 Hours, you can tell that. I mean, even some of Nick Nolte's reactions, you can tell that Murphy was nowhere near the script in some of those scenes.
Yeah.
And I think that's the brilliant part of what 48 Hours was about. And I think that's what was the problem with another 48 Hours. I don't think they let Murphy do that.
Right. Because the first movie worked so well as a comedy on accident. They tried to replicate it in the sequel and it didn't work. Same brings us back to our original point with movie 43. You cannot set out to make an offensive movie.
It happens or it doesn't.
Exactly.
Well, then what about like the one-liners? You know, one-liners in Arnold movies and Stallone movies and things like that, and Seagal movies and all that. Those were clearly meant to be comedy.
Well, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're funny just because we can't help but see them as funny because they're so – I mean, laughable is actually the perfect term to describe that.
Then what about Last Action Hero? A movie that was meant to be a parody / satire of action movies that ended up falling into all the same traps unintentionally of all the action movies that it was attempting to parody. To me, Last Action Hero is a failed movie on every level, because I can see where they're trying to be funny. Problem is, they're not.
I actually kind of liked Last Action Hero.
I found it grating. I just found it a grating movie.
I don't know. I mean, it's tough to pull off that kind of a balance. I mean, a successful version of that would be Tropic Thunder.
Which I won't see because I despise Jack Black and Ben Stiller.
You're missing out, man. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. gives one of the best comedic
performances in a movie
like of the past 10 years.
And see, I don't mind him. It's Jack Black. Like, Jack Black, I hate that guy. I don't think I have ever seen him be funny on camera. And yet he's always, hey, look at me, I'm a lovable goofball. And it always just makes me go, God, go away.
Well, I don't know. I can't say I agree with you. I've seen Jack Black be funny. I mean, he's in any of his movies that are intentionally funny, they've never come close to like the Tenacious D performances that they used to run on HBO back in the late 90s.
Okay, how about taking, you know, similarly, not quite Jack Black, but it reminded me of Will Ferrell. Something like Anchorman. Anchorman was a movie that I thought could have been funny as a sketch show, as like a half-hour show. There was not enough humor in that to make an entire movie, let alone a sequel, out of. And that's a movie that defines dragging the same jokes out over and over again.
Well, I don't know. I mean, a movie like Anchorman, you gotta step back and see the whole picture for what it is. You know what I mean? I mean, Anchorman, I don't think is funny unless you look at it in the context they're trying to create for it. I mean, it's in the 70s. It's at the height of the women's liberation movement. If you have to keep that in mind through the whole movie to, I think, appreciate it hopefully the way it was intended.
Well, you got to remember, I worked in a newsroom when that came out. So I was really kind of the target audience, and I grew up in the 70s, and the movie was totally flat to me. I just kept going, this is 90 minutes of Will Ferrell thinking he's funny and he's not.
Okay, you were born in the 70s, but really you grew up in the 80s.
Yeah, I lived through half of the 70s, okay? I do remember the 70s to a degree. I remember seeing Alien in the theater, that's 79. Saw Star Trek The Motion Picture in the theater, that's 79. So I do remember part of the 70s.
Yeah, but none of that had anything to do with the women's liberation movement, which is what Anchorman was focused on. I mean, I just think you have to keep it in context in order for it to work. I mean, speaking of Will Ferrell, Casa de Mi Padre is a good example of that. It's, you know, the theory that I was talking about earlier, that the key to comedy is sincerity. That, I mean, that is a whole movie just illustrating that point. I mean, have you seen that?
No. Because I don't like Will Ferrell.
It is very funny.
But then, okay, then what about, and this is sticking with Will Ferrell, the whole, you've seen this a lot in the last 10 years, the whole, and I'm putting this in quotes, lovable loser movie, where we're supposed to fall behind this asshole loser douche of a character whose life keeps going wrong because they're an asshole douche, like Eastbound and Down, the TV series that Will Ferrell produces. I couldn't make it more than the second episode of that before I said, this is terrible. This is not funny. I hate every single character in this show. Why would I keep watching it?
Right. And those are valid points. I've seen Eastbound and Down a few times. I don't mind it. I don't think it's a bad show. I just, Eastbound and Down is, you know, kind of in the same vein as Beavis and Butthead for me. The protagonists are not really protagonists. They're not meant to be heroes. They're meant to be laughed at, not laughed with.
And I get that, but then it even comes down to, why am I, the viewer, supposed to side with this asshole character? I mean, even if you're not supposed to kind of side with them, you kind of do because you're because they're the main character, but they're assholes. Like Shameless, the Frank character. Okay, you know, it's a guy that exemplifies every single thing that is wrong with American culture, and we're supposed to feel bad when he loses. I don't get that.
Well, it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's sort of a challenge for the viewer to find one shred of humanity or even redemption for that kind of character. And people who don't find it soon enough are not going to hang with the show. I mean, Eastbound and Down is kind of like that because Kenny Powers is a complete asshole. I mean, it's almost irredeemable, but every now and then they will let a little sliver of humanity show, and that to me is the whole point. Okay. I mean, it's easier to like a character who's just inherently good. It's a challenge to like a character that's really bad, but like any challenge, it's worth it when it happens. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, then how about something like, you brought up, how is that pronounced? Casa de Madre?
Casa de mi padre.
Casa de padre. Something like, I know you didn't think this was a comedy until the end, but like Christmas Evil. I believe the way you put that on Live Food Geeks was, that's a 90-minute setup to a 30-second joke. Right?
I'm laughing now just thinking about it.
Yeah, even thinking about it's making you laugh. But it was something like that. Do you think that works as a comedy now that you kind of said that it's a 90-minute setup to a 30-second joke or not?
No, I don't think it works as a comedy because Christmas Evil is not a comedy. The only reason why I laughed as hard as I did at that ending is because me being who I am, I can't help but put irony on that. Like, I can't help but see it as a joke in any other way. Because the dude who made Christmas Evil was not saying, wouldn't it be hilarious if we just had the van take off? I mean, I don't know what his reason is, and in fact, I would very much like to hear it, but he wasn't trying to make it funny. I made it funny by putting it in my own context, you know what I mean?
Well, because I was thinking, were you a fan of C-Lab 2021?
Yes, very much so.
Because they had one episode, it was right near the end of right before the Captain Murphy voice actor died, where it was just an entire C-Lab 2020 episode, you know, the Played Straight show.
It was James Coburn, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it wasn't James Coburn.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Okay.
It was an entire regular episode just dubbed with the new voices, all played completely straight, and then the last 5 seconds was the joke. So it was a 21-minute build-up to a 5-second joke. That, to me, was one of the most grating C-Labs I'd ever sat through.
Right.
Like, you know, this is not funny.
Yeah, because you can't do it on purpose. I mean, that's been the point that I've been coming back to this whole episode. You can't do it on purpose. It either happens or it doesn't.
Well, then, before we run out of time, how about, to stick with C-Lab, have you ever heard any of the commentaries on the DVDs for those?
No, I haven't.
Okay, it says, you know, feature length or commentary over all 13 episodes or whatever on the first season. They're all, and I'm putting this word in air quotes, joke commentaries. Not like the way the Scooby-Doo ones are where, you know, you've got Shaggy and Scooby in character watching the movie. Like,
right.
One of the episodes was just a man eating a sandwich. Another one was a guy just going, bubble, bubble, for the entire runtime. And I'm going, fuck you! That's not a commentary. You fucking lied to me to get my goddamn money.
See, but if the guy who said bubble for a half an hour could hear your reaction, he would be laughing his balls off.
Probably, but he still didn't get my money because I took it back to the store and got my money back.
Just because you didn't like the commentary?
I was that fucking pissed.
See, that's funny.
I was that goddamn mad, Charlie. I really was. I took it back to the fucking store.
Wow. Oh, my God. I would love to have been a fly on the wall for that conversation you had with the customer service desk.
But I mean, my point is the comedy, even if, like, the bubble thing was worth it, if they have to lie to do it? Because basically that, to me, was tantamount to false advertising. Well, technically, yes, it was a commentary over every episode. That's not what the word commentary means. Eating a sandwich in the background and a pinball machine being played is not a commentary.
I appreciate jokes like that, though. I mean, I do. I can, I just, I see the humor in them, and while I'm not laughing out loud at it, I don't think it's a laugh out loud kind of joke. I mean, nobody's going to split a gut over an entire commentary. It's just, it's a different kind of joke that I think is still funny in its own way. I mean, one thing, because you've been listening to Tales of Relevant Thought, right?
I've only heard the first episode so far.
Oh, okay. Well, but I mean, just hearing the first episode is enough to know the tone of the show.
Oh, absolutely. And I liked it. I enjoyed the hell out of that first episode. The reason I haven't listened is more of a time issue than a like issue.
Well, let me tell you this. A couple weeks ago, I brought this up to Tom Bad Guy. He really wants to do it. He's trying to find two other people who are willing to do it. But I think for the episode that comes out the week of April Fool's Day, I told him to advertise on his site like some awesome topic that we're going to have, or say we're going to have some awesome guest. And then when people listen to that episode, it's just going to be us for the entire hour going,
All right.
That's, to me, is sort of like an Andy Kaufman style joke that I really like.
How about, I was really proud of this, and some people called me a troll for it. How about what I did for the 1 year anniversary episode of Radiodrome? Where, you know how usually when like a sitcom would end their season, there would be a clip show?
Yeah.
We did a clip show, but we faked the clips into ever more increasingly ridiculous fakes, to the point where by the time you got 40 minutes in, it was pretty obvious that these were not real clips. So I did a fake clip show. I was really proud of that.
See, that is very funny, but like I'm saying, it's a different kind of humor.
And I don't know, like, okay, here's the real dichotomy of me and the two-facedness of me. While I trolled my audience on that Radiodrome, if I'd gotten trolled on a show I listened to like that, I'd have been pissed.
Right. You would have returned that DVD to the store.
You're just not letting that go, huh?
No, I may never let it go, because that is fucking hilarious.
I really did. I'm not exaggerating that either. I really did return it.
I mean, do you see what I'm saying, though? It's having a commentary of a dude eating a sandwich and someone playing pinball 30 feet away, it's not like a laugh-out-loud hilarious joke, but it's very funny intentions, and I respect people who commit to that level, you know what I mean?
Okay, going back to The Onion real quick, Cockpuncher in The Onion movie. The fact that Steven Seagal would outright parody himself the way he did, fucking brilliant.
Yes. And I respect Steven Seagal for that. Same thing with his character in Machete. But what I know you really don't like Seinfeld, but that season where it was the second to last season where they were pitching the sitcom idea, that's a good example of a self-deprecating joke. And the fact that they were able to craft that to fit the framework of the whole season, where the good example of that within the show was the scene where Jerry and George are coming up with the idea. Like, well, let's just have the show be about nothing. It's like, well, what do you mean a show about nothing? It's like, you know, an episode could just be me and you talking about whatever. It doesn't have to be about anything. And everyone's saying, well, who the hell would watch a show like that? That's stupid. I think that works.
I can see that. I still don't find it funny, but I can see why you do.
Yeah.
And that's not a shot in your direction. It's just, you know, you and I, generally, we have similar tastes when it comes to comedy, but not always, obviously. And I didn't even get to the other question I wanted to ask you was, is there a place where comedy goes too far? Can, you know, in your mind, can comedy ever go too far? Like my wanting to do Birth of a Nation on Live Nude Geeks to celebrate Black History Month idea.
Right. Well, the only time I think comedy goes too far, and I mean, stand-up is the easiest example for me, but I think when the intention is to be hurtful, that's when it goes too far. I mean, there's, you know, like I had a joke about the Aurora shooting that I actually told at a fundraiser for my friend Caleb.
Who was shot at the Aurora shooting.
Yes. The joke was, I think, you know, when a tragedy like this occurs, what I think we need to do, you know, I think it's part of the American character, We need to learn something from it. If you can learn something from a tragedy, then you can move on and, you know, you can heal from it. And what I think we've learned from this is that from this day forward, I believe that black people should be allowed to talk in a movie theater all they want. Especially if what they're going to say is, holy shit, that white guy has a gun.
And see, it made me smile.
See, that is, it's not hilarious, but it's a joke with good intentions.
Right.
A joke about that with bad intentions is just to be shocking. And I think a couple of weeks after it happened, Dane Cook caught a lot of shit because he was at, like, the Comedy Store or wherever. And he said, so I heard The Dark Knight wasn't that good. I heard, like, 10 minutes in, you're thinking to yourself, God, somebody shoot me already.
And see, I remember hearing similar jokes like that. And I just kind of went, I'm not offended at it. It's just not funny.
Right. It's not funny because the intentions are meant to either shock or hurt, but the intention was not to be funny.
Right.
He was just trying to be edgy or whatever it is that he considers himself, but
I don't consider him a comedian, but
I just think intentions have a lot to do with whether or not comedy goes too far.
Well, if people intend to find you, where can they do so?
You can find me on Facebook, Charlie McMullen, and I am now on Twitter, at Charlie McMullen, one word. Follow me, and I will lead you somewhere.
Yeah, I lost you to Twitter, damn it. I lost another one.
Well, I'm still on Facebook.
I know, but I refuse to tweet, so I refuse to Twitter.
Oh, then you would appreciate something I put on Twitter the other day.
I wouldn't know it because I don't Twitter.
What I said was, I think birds should have their own social networking site called Somebody Please Love Me, Anybody. It's only fair.
It's fair enough. And can't people find you at Geek Juice Media as well?
Absolutely. In fact, in just a few moments, you and I are going to be on there live.
Well, actually, when people hear this, that announcement will be a week old.
Okay. In just a few moments, you and I will have been on there live.
Exactly. So, geekjuicemedia.com, since my website has been hacked off of the internets again, you can find me at Geek Juice Media or contact me at lostinthestaticshow@gmail.com. Night, Charlie.
Night, Josh.